comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I'd say it's all right. Little darling.
Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from All Things Rock and Roll. Our sources today, therefore, include ClassicRock.com, BGO Records, The News and Observer, The Associated Press, About.com, and Entertainment Weekly. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This opening should recognize George Harrison, Here Comes the Sun. We'll be hearing more from spring rock and roll music, because today, after all, is the vernal equinox. Later on in today's program, and we'll close out today's program with some hits, rock and roll that is, from springtime in previous years. But first, these trivia questions. Our trivia questions come to us once again from ClassicRock.com. Classic Rock's Fascinating Facts. Question number one. John Lennon often expressed his dislike for Winston Churchill, the former British Prime Minister whom he was named after. He felt so strongly that he had his middle name changed from Winston to what? Hint. The new middle name was strongly related to an event that occurred 41 years ago today. Question number two. The White House in Washington, D.C. is the most visited house in America. What is the number two most visited house in America? Hint. It's related to rock and roll. The answers to these two questions will be given at the end of today's program. But first, these transition articles. The transition section of today's program is brought to us once again by BGORecords.com. Today in rock history, and today is March the 20th and March the 21st. What were the number one hits on these days? Well, back in 1959, it was the Platters with Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. Back in 1961, it was Elvis Presley, Surrender. In 67, on this weekend, it was the Beatles, She Loves You. Back in 71, it was Janis Joplin, Me and Bobby McGee. And back in 81, REO Speedwagon, Keep on Loving You. 1982, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, I Love Rock and Roll. Back in 87, this weekend, the number one hit was U2's The Joshua Tree. And finally, back in 93, Shaggy with O Carolina. If you were born on March the 20th, you share a birthday with Carl Palmer. He was born on that day back in 1951. He was with Emerson, Lake and Palmer in Asia. If you were born on March 21st, you share a birthday with Vivian Stanshall. He's from the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band. He was born on that day back in 1943. Back in 1945, on that day, March 21, Rosie Stone from Sly and the Family Stone. And if you were born on March 21, you share a birthday with Eddie Money. He was born on that day in 1949. And in 1950, Roger Hodgson from Supertramp was born on the 21st of March. Miscellany in rock history this weekend. Well, back in 1952 this weekend, it was Alan Freed hosting the Moondog Coronation Ball in Cleveland, Ohio. The first sign that black R&B has a large white following. Freed promotes the show from WJW Radio, sold 18,000 tickets in advance, and featured Charles Brown, the Moonglows, and Clyde McFadder. Back in 1955, on this weekend, it was Big Maybell Records, Whole Lotta Shakin' in New York. And back in 1960 this weekend, it was Elvis Presley recording first session since leaving the U.S. Army. Mess of Blues is the result. Back in 61 this weekend, it was the Beatles playing the Cavern Club for the first time, following a call from Pete Best's mum to DJ Bob Wooler. And back in 1964, this weekend, it was the Beatles releasing Can't Buy Me Love. In 65, this weekend, it was Motown Package Tour arrives in London with Stevie Wonder, Martha and the Vandellas, The Temptations, and The Supremes. In 69, on this day, it was John Lennon marrying Yoko Ono, and they begin their bed-in at the Amsterdam Hilton. Back in 1970, this weekend, it was the Beatles' Let It Be debuts at number 6 on the Billboard Hot 100, and that's the highest ever for a new entry. Back in 1980, Radio Caroline, original North Sea Radio, UK Private, sinks. In 1987, this weekend, Beatlemania returns to the U.S. chart as the group holds down the top 4 on U.S. CD chart with A Hard Day's Night, Please Please Me, Beatles for Sale, and With the Beatles. In 1990, on this weekend, it was Gloria Estefan's tour bus is involved in an accident, and the singer breaks several bones in her back. Back in 1991, this weekend, Connor, Eric Clapton's 4-year-old son, falls to his death from a 53-story New York City apartment window. Clapton later writes the song, Tears in Heaven. Back in 1991, on this weekend, it was Sony and Michael Jackson signing the richest deal in recording history. I had mentioned the vernal equinox early in today's program. What is that anyway? Well, this article from Anne-Marie Imbornoni and Elisa Haney from InfoPlease.com has an article entitled The Rite of Spring. Vernal equinox occurs on March the 20th. 2010. I'll skip around in this article just to give you the highlights. On March the 20th, 2010, or 2010, at precisely 1:32 p.m. EDT, the sun will cross directly over the Earth's equator. This moment is known as the vernal equinox in the northern hemisphere. For the southern hemisphere, this is the moment of the autumnal equinox. Equinox means equal night, translated literally. Because the sun is positioned above the equator, day and night are about equal in length all over the world during the equinoxes. Reasons for the seasons. These brief but monumental moments owe their significance to the 23.4-degree tilt of the Earth's axis. If the Earth rotated on an axis perpendicular to the plane of the Earth's orbit around the sun, there would be no variation in day lengths or temperatures throughout the year, and we would not have seasons. The date is significant in Christianity because Easter always falls on the first Sunday after the first full moon after the vernal equinox. So, March 20th this year is the vernal equinox. It sometimes occurs on the 21st, however. Regardless, we're using this as an excuse then to highlight music that reflects spring. But first, this local rock news. Kitty feels free to roam. This was from March the 5th, 2010. News and Observer. The members of Kitty may change, the band's attire might morph, yet one thing that never alters is the Canadian metal act Sonic Attack. Kitty performed March the 7th at the Volume 11 Tavern, Still Loves It Loud. The band's latest offering, In the Black, is an energized slab of menacing, muscular, ominous metal. The all-female band's fifth studio release is the band's most powerful effort to date. That was the plan, vocalist-guitarist Morgan Lander says from her London, Ontario home. We wanted this album to be a monster. We went for it with this album. We felt really boxed in with the last album, 2007's Funeral for Yesterday. But this was a liberating experience. This was probably the most enjoyable experience we've had in the studio. It was like starting over for Kitty. The band was label-less while writing and recording the tracks. It was the first time since the late 90s when the group was comprised of teenage girls that it didn't have a record company. We got to make the album on our own terms, Lander says. It was like when we were just starting out since it was really loose. We lived at a house at the studio. We stayed true to our sound, but I did some things differently. Lander took some chances and morphed as a vocalist. Her voice is deeper and richer. I wanted to sing a bit lower, she says. I didn't want to sound so nasal. I wanted to use my body more. It was a really good experiment. The core of Kitty has been Lander and her drummer sister, Mercedes, who formed the act 14 years ago. Seven members have left the band since its inception. Kitty, which also includes guitarist Tara McLeod and bassist Ivy Juvik, has never been so stable, according to Lander. "We all get along better than any other Kitty configuration. It's very comfortable right now, no matter how things went. I always have had my sister. She's been my rock through all of this, through the good and the bad." There was plenty of good in 1999, shortly after the release of their debut album, Spit. The song, Brackish, hit the rock charts, and the band was tapped to open for Slipknot for an arena tour. "We were on the radio and were playing big places, and I was just 18, Lander says. It was crazy. It was cool. We experienced the ups and downs, but we're still here. We're survivors. We might not be at the top of the charts, but our band is still alive." Lander's 28 and her sister's 26. "I think people are surprised that we're this young," Lander says. "Some people our age just started their bands, but we've been in this band half of our lives, and we're not even 30 years old. The funny thing is that we're just getting started." This next article, put out by the Associated Press and published in the News and Observer on the 15th of March, 2010, "The Stooges finally make it into Rock Hall of Fame." Iggy Pop was starting to feel like the Susan Lucci of rock and roll, just as the veteran soap actress believed she might never win a daytime Emmy. The godfather of punk was certain his groundbreaking band, the Stooges, wouldn't ever earn a spot in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. As it turns out, Lucci got her gold statue on the 19th try, and Iggy and the boys finally are getting their shot at today's, once again this 15th of March, induction ceremony on their eighth attempt. "At least I won't be nominated anymore," Pop said, laughing. He thought the Stooges never would get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame right up until the day before somebody called me. "I kept telling the guys over and over, we're not going to get in, guys." "Yeah, I was absolutely sure of that," Pop said in an interview. It's hard to say exactly what turned the tide in voter sentiment, but Pop points to three possibilities: the band's long streak of rock hall futility, the January 2009 death of founding member Ron Ashton, and Madonna. The Stooges honored their fellow Michigan native by performing rocking versions of two of her hits, Burning Up and Ray of Light, on the night of the 2008 induction ceremony. Pop said the gig helped provide some much-needed exposure for a band that wasn't really heard from for 30 years, the result of numerous band breakups and lineup changes. "I thought, well, some of the people there will see that we don't have horns. We're not going to breathe fire on the tables or anything," he said. "I knew the thing would be televised, and 15% to 20% of the viewers wouldn't be able to differentiate. If they see you on TV, they'll think you've been inducted anyway." Whatever the reason, the band will be on the stage at New York's Waldorf Astoria Hotel, but this time they'll be performing their own tunes. They selected I Want to Be Your Dog and Search and Destroy, two songs Stooges guitarist James Williamson says are the most representative of the band's work. "I am the world's forgotten boy," Pop screeches in Search and Destroy. Not anymore. The other inductees, by the way, include ABBA, Genesis, Jimmy Cliff, and the Hollies. The ceremony aired at 8:30 p.m. on the 15th of March. So in looking for rock and roll music that represented spring, I came across this article by Robert Fontenot from About.com Guide. It's called Oldies Mixtape 103, A Spring Symphony, a soundtrack for showers, sunshine, and green fields. A Spring Symphony. He writes, "We all know that oldies artists love the summertime, but what does the discriminating listener do when winter's over and a new beginning is just, well, beginning? This playlist offers some idea. It moves through the mid-60s and 70s to find happy, nature-loving songs that capture spring's unique mood of rebirth and renewal. So download these to make the perfect spring rock CD. Number one, The Beatles' Here Comes the Sun. That opened today's program. We have the George Harrison version that he performed live at a Japan concert. Perhaps the ultimate rock song about the cycle of winter into spring, done as only the deep one, that is George, can. Number two, The Rascals, A Beautiful Morning. Save the slow and sexy grooving for the summer. This is the sound of waking up refreshed and ready. Number three, The Loving Spoonful, Daydream. What would spring be without the happy-go-lucky, folky attitude of John Sebastian? Number four, The Toys, A Lover's Concerto. Beloved by many, this Motown-styled take on Bach's Minuet and G ties new love in with the new weather. Number five, Gary Lewis and the Playboys, Green Grass, celebrates the arrival of spring and the preparation for summer. Surprisingly up-tempo for a song with a harpsichord. Number six, The Beach Boys, Their Hearts Were Full of Spring. A neglected a cappella classic from this group, best known for summer tunes, this four freshmen tribute offers a deeper, more serious look at the metaphorical seasons. Number seven, The Cowsills, The Rain, The Park, and Other Things. Self-explanatory, but our narrator is obviously eyeing his new love through a spring, not a winter, rain. Number eight, Spanky and Our Gang, Lazy Day. Goes all out, including not just blue skies and sunshine, but rowboats, balloons, and squirrels. Number nine, Harper's Bazaar, 59th Street Bridge Song, Feeling Groovy. Some prefer the original Simon and Garfunkel version, but either way, few songs make goofing off sound so necessary. Number 10, Hugh Mascala, Grazing in the Grass, a classic, jazzy instrumental that really captures the mood. Perfect for those of you who need more cowbell, and indeed there are on this song. Number 11, Fifth Dimension, Up, Up, and Away. Lush and inviting, this Jimmy Webb tune practically takes you into the clouds all on its own. How about a balloon ride? Number 12, Van Morrison, Sweet Thing. The master seasonal impressionism reached a peak here with Love as a Walkthrough. Gardens all misty, wet with rain. Number 13, B.J. Thomas, Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. Still can't shake that sad mood? Take a cue from Burt Bacharach and smile at the spring rain. Number 14, Cat Stevens, Morning Has Broken. A traditional look at the wonders of the seasonal cycle that reaches new heights in Cat's spiritual hands. Number 15, Johnny Nash, I Can See Clearly Now. One of rock's great anthems of renewal. More a metaphor than anything, but still very powerful. Number 16, The Doobie Brothers, Another Park, Another Sunday. Yes, the lyrics are dour, but the mood is pure doobies, which make it perfect for the season. The last four in this mix are number 17, Chicago, Saturday in the Park. He may think it was the 4th of July, but this ultimate park song fits spring just as well. Number 18, Neil Sedaka, Laughter in the Rain. Was there ever a more perfect recreation of fresh love in a spring shower? Number 19, Bob Marley, Three Little Birds, a true classic that even children can get into from reggae's Leading Light. And finally, number 20, Bill Withers, Lovely Day. We close with an impressive testament to how love can make any day feel like springtime. It's impossible not to be transported by Withers' voice here. So let's listen to some snippets then from this collection. We'll start out with Daydream from the Loving Spoonful, and then Laughter in the Rain with Neil Sedaka, and then Lazy Day with Spanky and Our Gang, and we'll conclude today's program with A Beautiful Morning by the Rascals. But first, Daydream, the Loving Spoonful.
What a day for a daydream. What a day for a daydreaming boy. And I'm lost in a daydream, dreaming about my bundle of joy. And even if time ain't really on my side, it's one of those days for taking a walk outside. I'm blowing the day to take a walk in the sun and follow my face on somebody's new mowed lawn. I've been having a sweet dream. I've been dreaming since I woke up today. It's starring me in my sleep.
And now Neil Sedaka's Laughter in the Rain.
Strolling
snippet from Spanky and Our Gang, Lazy Day. This vernal equinox weekend is sunny and bright. We'll close out today's program with A Beautiful Morning by the Rascals. But first, these articles. This next article is published by David Menconi, News and Observer, on March the 10th, 2010. No flash, but a steady fire for Clapton fans. 20 years ago, Eric Clapton put out an album called Journeyman, a title that seemed like a self-effacing joke, but that's what Clapton has become as he approaches his 65th birthday, a journeyman, bluesman, like the old-timers he came up idolizing, and it suits him. Of course, being rock royalty does have its privileges, such as drawing enough fans to pack the house to the RBC Center on a Monday night, even without a new album to draw attention. The crowd got a comfortably paced 100-minute performance that was quite good, if not particularly energetic. Clapton spent fully one-third of it sitting down playing acoustically, which cut down on the fireworks quotient, and he truly stretched out on guitar only for a couple of songs. Monday's show did offer a rare opportunity to see two Rock and Roll Hall of Famers on the same bill, with Roger Daltrey serving as opening act. Daltrey noted that this tour represents his first support slot since The Who opened for the Rolling Stones back in 1964, and they did all right for themselves, he said drolly. With a shorter time on stage, Daltrey played a tighter and less self-indulgent set than the ones he played at the Durham Performing Arts Center in October. Of course, Who songs provided the highlights, especially Young Man Blues, complete with his patented microphone lasso move, Baba O'Reilly, and a ripping Who Are You. At the end of 50 minutes, Daltrey got a well-earned standing ovation. If Daltrey came on like a blazing inferno, Clapton was more like a fire banked down to warm embers. He entered with no fanfare, swung into going down slow, and went about his business with a minimum of fuss. Good evening, thank you, or good night, was as chatty as he got. In contrast to some of Clapton's big bands of tours past, his backup group was quite spartan. Two keyboardists, two backup singers, bass, drums, and Clapton himself as the only guitar player. You might expect a riff fest from that, but most of the show was in a mellow tone. He did his most impassioned playing on Old Love and Bo Diddley's Before You Accuse Me, both from the aforementioned Journeyman album, plus the obligatory Robert Johnson offerings of Little Queen of Spades and the closing, Crossroads. All five songs, the acoustic interlude, went on just a shade too long and was hit or miss. Running on Faith worked well, and Clapton playing I've Got a Rock and Roll Heart acoustically meant we were spared from seeing the accompanying T-Mobile commercial on the video screens. But would someone please persuade him to retire the acoustic lounge lizard version of Layla for good? What was once kind of a cool change-up long ago hardened into gimmicky shtick, and it's an emasculation of one of the great classic rock riffs. Ugh! Otherwise, it's a measure of the depth of Clapton's catalog that so many of his most distinctive songs went missing, including After Midnight, Let It Rain, Sunshine of Your Love, and Lay Down Sally. But he did offer up I Shot the Sheriff, Wonderful Tonight, and of course, Cocaine. And everybody hollered and jumped up and down just like they always do. He's good. This next article is written by Leah Greenblatt in Entertainment Weekly, published on the 12th of March, 2010. Gorillaz, Plastic Beach. 12 years ago, Blur frontman Damon Albarn and Tank Girl creator Jamie Hewlett formed Gorillaz, a virtual band whose animated avatars and woozy beats, pastiche, seem custom fit for a dawning era of smartphones, iPods, and other Jetson-y gizmos. "I'm useless, but not for long. The future is coming on," Albarn drawled on their first single, the Debbie Alt chart hit Clint Eastwood. He was right. Gorillaz' self-titled debut sold almost 2 million copies in the U.S. and made them stars, albeit in physical absentia. Even in live performances, they are hidden behind giant cartoon projections. A half-decade after their last release, 2005's multi-platinum sophomore outing, Demon Days, the band has returned, once again gilding their four-character core with a delightfully random roster of guest stars: Snoop Dogg, legendary soul smoothie Bobby Womack, Lou Reed, and The Clash's Mick Jones among them. Like its name, Plastic Beach has a sharp tang of cognitive dissonance. Its songs sound like dispatches from a crew of hip kids astronauts unmoored in some space dust ether. Sometimes, especially in the album's later half, the sonic drift can come off as dull and even dispiriting. Often, though, they do it with style. Womack brings an organic jolt to the mentholated Casio cool of Stylo, while the sparse, glitchy bass of White Flag is embroidered with brilliant threads of Bhangra. In the end, Beach offers a vision of the future as digitized kitsch. Groovy, yes, but lonely, too. Download these: Stylo, the robot funk single, and Rhinestone Eyes, a spooky synth lament. And Leah Greenblatt gives us a B. So, how'd you do on the trivia questions? Well, John Lennon often expressed his dislike for Winston Churchill, so John changed his middle name from Winston to what? Answer is, in fact, Ono. After he married Yoko, which was, in fact, 41 years ago this weekend. The White House in Washington, D.C. is the most visited house in America. What's the second most? And it's rock-related. That is, in fact, Graceland, Elvis Presley's former home.
It's a beautiful morning. I think I'll go outside for a while. Just smile. Just taking some clean, fresh air for me. Get inside. If the weather's fine and you got the time, it's your chance to.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until...
You couldn't keep me down. It just...